Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Missoula, Missouri. The Law Hour is an education service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on aspartame and sugar when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful governmental agencies, multinational corporations, the lobbyists, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution that was designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. And the courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. That does not belong to the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for instance, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to one who is indifferent thereto, because it's a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat, and it cannot be claimed by your attorney or your solicitor. And your rights are only valid when they're insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. That comes from U.S. versus Johnson, and that's why I contend that we should be listening more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or your solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about aspartame. Not just aspartame, because these artificial sugars come in a variety of different names and labels. For instance, it may be saccharin, cyclamate, stevia, sucralose, splenda, sugar, aspartame, equal, NutraSweet, equal measure, spoonful, or Canderel E951. Now, there's some real questions as to whether or not these artificial chemical sweeteners are good for you. So far, we've discovered that they're not only not good for you, they're poison. They're killing you. And one of the 92 symptoms that you will develop from the use of aspartame is death. That's a pretty final symptom. Now, there's a couple of agencies that are charged with protecting us from bad food. That's the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And oftentimes, people will write me nasty, surly emails or letters or call on the phone and say, you dunderhead, don't you know that the FDA is there to protect consumers, or the USDA is there to protect us from bad farmers, or a Archer Daniels Midland or somebody else? And you're right. You're right. That's what they're there for. That's what Congress created those agencies for. Unfortunately, those agencies don't work for you, the consumer. They work for Archer Daniels Midland. They work for Monsanto and the chemical companies and the multinational corporations and the food processing industry. It kind of reminds me of the police car that has the little insignia, you know, on the side door, you know, the police car. It'll have your city's insignia, and then it'll say to protect and serve. And the police are certainly there to protect and serve. I don't deny that. It's just that the police are not there to protect and serve you. They're there to protect and serve someone, but it's not you. The police are there to protect and serve corporate America. And that's because there's a contract with corporate America, and as a matter of law, the police are there to protect Sears, Penny's, and Circle K. They're not there to protect Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. And the same thing now is true with the FDA. They are there to protect and serve. No doubt about it. They're there to protect and serve Monsanto and Kraft Foods and General Mills, Archer Daniels Midland. They are not there to protect you, Joe Sixpack. Now, that's the bottom line. So that's what we've been looking at for the last couple of programs. And the last time we were analyzing the history of the approval of aspartame, which began in 1969, and we followed that through to 1975. Now, in 1976, here's the rest of the story. As old Paul Harvey used to say, it is significant to note that the Searle employee who was responsible for reviewing most of the reproduction studies had only had 1 year of prior experience. He worked on population dynamics of cottontail rabbits while employed by the Illinois Wildlife Service. And in order to prepare this fellow for his title of Senior Research Assistant in Teratology, which means fetal damage, the Searle Pharmaceutical Company bought him books to read on the subject and also sent him to a meeting of the Teratology Society. This is what qualified this fellow to submit 18 of the initial tests to the FDA concerning aspartame. This qualified him to submit these 18 study initial tests in addition to training an assistant and two technicians. Now, he certainly must have been kept pretty busy, because Searle claimed that 329 teratology examinations were conducted in just 2 days. In 2 days, they looked at 329 fetuses and determined that none of them had any problems at all with aspartame. He estimated that he himself examined about 30 fetuses a day, but officials for the Center for Food and Applied Nutrition could never determine how that was possible. Let's see, 30 a day, assuming he's working 8 hours a day, and he does 30 divided by 8 hours. Well, that's 3.75 an hour. You know, it's about 4 an hour, it's about one every 15 minutes. Let's see. You take a fetus out of a jar of formaldehyde, you put it on your workbench, and you're going to study this fetus to see whether or not aspartame is in this fetus's body tissue, or if aspartame is a problem with abortion or something like that, and you do one every 15 minutes. Not only do these guys lie, they don't even lie in a way that is credible, that is believable. I mean, hell, even a truck driver wouldn't believe that kind of crap, now would he? Now, the results of the task force's investigation of aspartame and several other Searle drugs was presented and discussed in a Senate Subcommittee on Labor and Public Welfare meeting on April 8, 1976. Now, Senator Edward Kennedy stated that the extensive nature of the almost unbelievable range of abuses discovered by the FDA on several major Searle products is profoundly disturbing. That was Senator Kennedy. He said, after he reviewed this information that I've just shared with you in this report over the last couple of programs, Senator Kennedy understated the problem by saying, this is profoundly disturbing. Now, I don't know about you boys and girls, but down on the docks, we say that's just so much BS. Further, in 1976, based on the serious concerns and the findings of the 1975 task force, the FDA instigated another investigation to look into 15 questionable studies submitted by Searle. If I had an employee, you know, that lied to me consistently, especially 13 times, I'd fire the SOB and get the hell out of here, wouldn't you? Not the FDA. The FDA is still studying the problem. They've documented 13 false studies submitted by Searle. They have approved aspartame based upon those 13 false studies and the fraud that's investigated. And then Senator Kennedy says, hey, this is profoundly disturbing. We've got to have another study. Meanwhile, people die. People get sick. There are 92 symptoms now that come from aspartame. Not only wasn't this stuff tested and then approved based upon good tests, it wasn't even tested. That was the problem with the 13 false studies. They said they'd tested it when, in fact, they hadn't. And then they lied and got the stuff approved. The FDA, evidently somebody got paid off. And then after they approved this aspartame, they went back and they found out that, hey, wait a minute, these 13 studies are lies, and we've got all of this fraud and corruption going on here, but we need more studies. One of them was a 15,000-pager, remember? A 15,000-page study to find out whether or not Searle lied. Then after they found out that they lied about the material that they had presented to get this aspartame approved, they said, well, what we need is more studies. Oh, I see. And you're sitting there telling me that the FDA is there to protect us? I mean, you know, you got to be brain dead if you believe that. 1977, a five-member FDA task force headed by the FDA veteran inspector Jerome Bressler were given three studies to examine, and the UAREP, I don't know what that is, but whatever they are, they're important because it's the UAREP, a private group from Rockville, Maryland, examined the other 12 studies. Searle paid the UAREP $500,000 to validate their studies. Their conclusions, the FDA task force, were some of the test animals had developed many uterine tumors that Searle admitted were due to the DKP-related dosages. The higher the dosage, the higher the incidence of uterine tumors. Some of the blood tests submitted by Searle had been falsified. Searle claimed that they had experienced some problems with their instruments and therefore had substituted the results from another unrelated animal test. Can you believe this? Let me read that to you again. Searle, when they got caught submitting blood tests that had been falsified, came in and said, well, the reason that happened was because we experienced some problems with our instruments. So therefore, rather than do the test over again, we substituted the results from another totally unrelated animal test. And you call this science? Well, if I had a kid that did that, I'd whip him. As my old daddy used to say, I'd whop him. Now, it was later discovered that in some studies, the UAREP pathologists who were charged with examining the test results withheld their negative findings and submitted only the most favorable reports to the FDA. Didn't you think that scientists were objective people in white coats and they just were interested in the truth no matter what comes up? I'm just going to report the facts. It's what I see on television, you know, when I watch CSI or some of these programs on TV. You know, they tell us, you know, that these scientists, you know, are above reproach. You can't bribe a scientist. But you can sure as hell buy them. And that's what's going on here, boys and girls, is that you just go into the universities. I got to tell a story here. Make a little mark here in the margin. I got to tell a story. Back in the 1950s, when I was just a kid, there was a new product came out from the John Deere Company. And the John Deere people had come up with a field chopper and a wagon. And they said, look, when your cows go down into the field, they urinate and defecate on the grass. And you lose about 40% of the feed in the field. Now, you know, that's pushing half. So half of it gets eaten and the other half gets wasted. How would you like, you farmers? Hey, how would you farmers like to get 100% of the grass that comes off of the field? And then convert that 100% of that grass into milk instead of just 50%. Why, we could double your feed by field chopping. Now that's got some merit to it, you know. You got 200 acres and you've got 100 cows, and that's one cow for every 2 acres. It's a little bit short, but some places will manage that. And you say, well, gee, I could have twice as many cows, or I could get twice as much feed off of my acreage if I bought a field chopper. So the John Deere people went to the University of California at Davis, and they said, hey, test this field chopper and give us a report. And they did. And the report came out with all the statistics and studies and numbers on there that anybody that didn't buy a John Deere field chopper had to be brain dead. He had to be stupid. And they went out and they sold a lot of field choppers, and so did J.I. Case and International. Everybody got in on the act. And here's what happened, though. You see, when you field chop, the cows don't put any manure on the field. So you have to take all that manure out of the feedlot, and you got to haul it down there. And this is called cost. You see, when the cow is down there urinating on the ground and defecating on the ground, she's fertilizing the ground and doesn't cost anything because she's already there. I remember old John Enos told me one time, he says, I'm too damn lazy to chop. I asked him up at the Blue Room one day, I said, how come you're not chopping, you know, like everybody else? And he said, too damn lazy. He said, see, I can just let that cow walk down to the field, that's a mile, and she can eat the grass, make milk, and then she can walk back a mile and I'll milk her up here at the barn, and then she can walk back down to the field. And in the process of doing that, she fertilizes my field. Now, of course, Francis Capini and all of us guys, we're up here loading up this manure and hauling it down there a mile to spread it on the field. Well, when it all was said and done and all shook out, all the farmers found out that it costs more to chop the stuff in the field, haul it up, feed it to the cows, build all of those bunks. You know, the bunks, you know, to feed them with, feed them in. Then you get out of it. In other words, we actually spent money to buy all of that material, all that equipment, and went to all this extra work to do something that the cow was doing for us anyway, free of charge. We paid the cow 40% of the feed in the field to do that, rather than take 50%, convert it to milk, take the check, buy the chemical fertilizers, et cetera, and put it back on the field and go to all that extra work. Now, that's the science that John Deere bought and paid for. It came out later that they paid Davis $2 million for that study. Now, if those scientists down there at Davis had done their work, they would have said, well, look, by the time you get through hauling that manure out of the feedlot back down there to the field, or buy the additional chemical fertilizer, or you figure in the labor that it takes to do all of this and the amount of milk that you're going to get off of this field over here, and you put the numbers together and crunch them, you're going to find out that you're losing money with this field chopper. You're better off just doing what you're doing. But that doesn't sell machinery, and that won't sell artificial sweeteners. And so the big corporations go into these universities and they give them grants, and then the university personnel come to the scientists and say, now listen, we just got $5 million from the Searle Pharmaceutical Company, and you're working on a Searle project. You make sure that your report on that Searle product is favorable so that they'll keep giving us more money. So the corporations buy the scientific results that they want, in the same way that lobbyists bribe and buy the laws that they want from the Congress. Now, that's the way the game is played. So wake up and smell a coffee. In January of 1977, well, let me finish this paragraph here. I put a note right here. In other cases, the pathologists reading tissue slides completely missed cancerous brain tumors. In one study alone, it was found that there had been malignant brain tumors in 12 animals, but the UAREP had reported to the FDA that just 3 animals had tumors. So when they got to auditing the results, they found out that this outfit called the UAREP, which was hired by Searle to do these independent studies, well, of course they were independent studies by an outside company that was bought and paid for, just like a lobbyist buys and pays for a congressman to vote on a particular bill. In the automobile industry, I got to laugh, you know, when I hear these ads by Dodge, and they say there's some company, I forgot the name of it now, but the AB Acme company over here rates Dodge as being the number one pickup, you know, in its class. Well, hell, Ford does the same thing, and so does General Motors. They just go out here and create a corporation. All you got to do is go down to your Secretary of State, pay him a $120 fee, and he'll charter a corporation for you. And then you have this corporation, which is owned and operated by the Chrysler Corporation, test your vehicles along with a bunch of others. And what kind of a report do you think you're going to get from a Dodge Corporation subdivision who's testing Fords and Chevys and Dodges? What kind of a report do you think you're going to get? And that's the way you make your decisions? I mean, come on, kids, let's grow up and get real. In January, the FDA formally requested the U.S. Attorney Samuel Skinner to conduct a grand jury investigation of the tests on two Cyril products, NutraSweet and Aldactone, a drug to treat high blood pressure. Now, Samuel Skinner removed himself from the case 2 months later because of anticipated employment with the law firm of Sidley and Austin, who at that time were defending Cyril in the investigation. In 1989, Mr. Skinner acknowledged that he may have made some mistakes in his handling of the NutraSweet investigation. Samuel Skinner is presently Secretary of the U.S. Department of Transportation. This department is responsible for overseeing the transporting and handling of hazardous materials, including the imports of aspartame products shipped to the NutraSweet company by Searle's Japanese licensee. Got to talk about incest here. Very common practice here, for instance, a guy is working for the FDA, and he approves some product here for some big corporation. Then he retires from the FDA after he puts in his 20 years, so he's got this government pension, and then he goes to work for Kraft or Searle or some pharmaceutical company. And he gets this cushy job with this corporation. And that's part of the payoff that he gets for having approved these products, which are dangerous, or in the case of Vioxx, which is the latest, remember Merck put out this product called Vioxx, killed a bunch of people. And so now there's, I don't know, several thousand lawsuits pending against Merck for killing people. Well, hell, if they'd have tested that product, if the FDA was there protecting consumers, they would have tested the product, and they never would have approved it. But if the pharmaceutical company wants this product approved, they go to the FDA and they say, okay, well, we want this product approved, and the FDA is going to approve it. It's just that simple. What they want is what they get. Now, of course, then comes the marketplace. Now, there's coming legislation. They've already done this with vaccinations. Let's suppose that some vaccine killed your kid, gives him autism, or causes some kind of damage. You can't sue the pharmaceutical company. Did you know that? It's barred by law. And just like we saw here with the big corporations, they go in and they buy through their lobbyists. They go in and buy the votes that they want. It was Dick Armey that got that legislation enacted just before he retired from the House. He was a representative from Texas, and he slipped it in, you know, one of these kind of deals where you slip it in and nobody knows about it. Well, the big corporations have been doing that in all kinds of industries. It can be defense, it can be healthcare, it can be foods, it can be drugs, whatever it is. Now, mark my words, you're going to come to see a time when you can't sue a pharmaceutical company over a drug. For instance, this Vioxx thing. Pretty soon, the Congress is going to enact legislation, and it'll be that, well, okay, so Merck sold you Vioxx, and the Vioxx killed you, but you can't sue them because we've barred that by law. Now, what do you call that? Huh? Democracy in action, isn't it? 1977. Let's see where I'm at here. It is ironic. Oh, no. Japanese licensee here. Searle was not a newcomer to grand jury proceedings based on falsified and inaccurate test reports submitted to the FDA. In 1975, the Justice Department had instituted proceedings against Searle based on findings in animal studies for two drug products, Flagyl and Aldactone, two Searle drugs which were on the market even now. This was another case in which there were problems with false and inaccurate reporting of tumor findings. There was still an additional Searle drug whose testing was very questionable and which came under fire by Adrian Gross. It took Searle 2 years to respond, but the answer only raised more questions. Dr. Marvin Legater, professor and director of environmental toxicology at the University of Texas, who helped pioneer the mutagenically testing, mutagenicity testing at the FDA, is quoted as saying that all of the Searle tests were scientifically irresponsible and disgraceful. What the hell? You know, if you get a product to sell, what do you care if you're testing procedures are irresponsible and disgraceful? We're here to sell product. Now, the agency that should shut down these Searles and Monsantos, the FDA, the USDA, the Department of Commerce, and so on, don't do that because they're working for the big corporations. Now, this is called fascism. The political name is fascism. It is ironic that the FDA used guidelines recommended by Searle in developing the industry-wide FDA standards for good laboratory practices. To get that, it's ironic that the FDA used guidelines recommended by Searle in developing the industry-wide FDA standards for good laboratory practices. My God, if the laboratory practices that are used by the other pharmaceutical companies follow the Searle formula and the FDA says, wow, Searle really has good practices. My God, we already found out here that they lie, dummy up the results, and then buy off what they call independent research laboratories over here in order to get it approved. So if that's the way Searle does it and the FDA says this is a good practice, then it's industry-wide, isn't it? 1977, Mr. William Conlon, senior assistant U.S. attorney, was assigned to the Searle case, but he took no action. I'll bet you if I didn't pay my income taxes that Mr. Conlon would be on me like flies on stink. And here's an outfit making billions of dollars on this crap, killing God knows how many people. See, nobody's ever done a study to find out how many people die from aspartame poisoning. Last week, remember we were talking about this thing of iatrogenic disease? You know, we really don't know how many people doctors kill, but it's a bunch. And we all are agreed that at least it's this many. We came to a conclusion, remember last week, about 250,000 a year? How many people are being killed from artificial sweeteners? I doubt if it's 250,000, but I'll bet you it's 10, 15, 20,000 a year. You know, if it was 40,000 a year, then as many people are dying from aspartame poisoning or as dying in automobile wrecks, and we get kind of excited about that, don't we? Now, nobody's even looking, and nobody ever signs a death certificate and says, God, this guy died from aspartame poisoning. When somebody dies, they die from pneumonia. They die from cancer, you know. So if the aspartame gave you cancer and you died, they'd say you died from cancer. If you had a stroke, they'd say, well, you died from a stroke. Nobody's going to say that it was aspartame that did it. Although you got 92 symptoms over here, and one of the symptoms of aspartame poisoning is, you guessed it, death. God, it makes you want to puke, doesn't it? Hang on a second. Let me give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts homeschooling programs for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School Director at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective 7 days a week. And the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, newsletters, and so on to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we use on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint, by the way, is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to our website. Remember, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Director at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing aspartame, primarily, aspartame and sugar. Let me give you the source on this report. This is called Aspartame, NutraSweet and Equal, The Story of a Deadly Deception, compiled from volumes of available published information by the Aspartame Consumer Safety Network. Now, this is not from the web. This is a published report, but it's put out by the Aspartame Consumer Safety Network, and a number of these reports that I'm reading from cite the Aspartame Consumer Safety Network. So why don't you go to Google and or Yahoo or somebody, a search engine, and put in aspartame, and then see if you can find the Aspartame Consumer Safety Network. Now, this report was put out in 1990. It's such a good report. It's the history of aspartame, you know, year by year. Started out in 1969, and it'll carry it right up to 1981, step by step. Comes right out of the FDA's files over here, and it'll tell you a story. It'll tell you how the FDA is protecting you. God, you'll love it. It's your tax dollars at work. As long as you're spending the money, you might as well be getting something for it. 1977, on July 1st. Mr. Thomas Sullivan was appointed U.S. Attorney. He also took no action on the Searle case. On July 20th, yet another letter was written by Richard Merrill, chief counsel for the FDA, to the office of Thomas Sullivan, reminding them of the repeated requests to start legal action against Searle. Despite the FDA's offers to provide any needed assistance, neither Sullivan or Conlon took any action. Now, this is the Justice Department now. So Searle evidently bought off the Justice Department, or Searle bought off President, who is it, 1977, be Jimmy Carter. This is the Carter years now, 1977, by July of 77. So evidently the Searle people have some pretty good political connections, don't they? Now, if you and I did this, we'd be in the penitentiary. But if you're a big multinational corporation and you're throwing a lot of bucks around, and you know, and then you can get away with pretty much what you want to. You can buy off, or you can buy whatever it is you want. Now, Conlon finally reduced or ended his involvement in the investigation, and the 5-year statute of limitations for a grand jury investigation expired. 1 year later, Conlon took a position with Sidley and Austin, the law firm representing Searle. Okay, can you see the incest there? So here's your U.S. attorney now takes a job after he retires from the Justice Department with the private law firm that's representing Searle. Well, that kind of tells you. So he got bought off. He got paid some bucks. Now, in 1977, Donald Rumsfeld, former member of Commerce and chief of staff in the Ford administration, was hired as Searle's president. Okay, now, Donald Rumsfeld today is the Secretary of Defense. You remember Don? Now, Donald Rumsfeld has been in public life like George Bush Sr. all of his life. He's an old man now. Hell, he's pushing 80. And he's been a congressman. He's been in the Nixon and the Ford administrations. He's been Secretary of Defense twice. I don't know what all who's who will have on Donald Rumsfeld, but I mean he's an insider's insider. Now this guy, Rumsfeld, becomes the Searle president. Searle now is owned by Monsanto. At that time it was an independent drug company, but Monsanto needed a drug company, so they went out and bought one. And Searle was for sale, and they went out and bought it. Well, Mr. Dixon, then Searle's vice chairman, told the Wall Street Journal that without Rumsfeld, Searle would not have gotten approval for any drug that the FDA was investigating. Rumsfeld said that he could handle aspartame as a legal rather than a scientific problem. In 1980, shortly after Reagan came into power, Rumsfeld was quoted as saying that he would call in all of his markers and that no matter what, he would see to it that aspartame would be approved that year. Got that? Rumsfeld earned $2 million in salary and $1.5 million in bonuses between 79 and 84 at the Searle Company. Donald Rumsfeld, Searle's president, hires John Robson as executive vice president. Now, Robson was a former lawyer with Sidley and Austin, Searle's law firm, and also served as chairman of the Civil Aeronautics Board, which was then connected to the Department of Transportation. Rumsfeld hired Robert Shapiro as general counsel. He's now head of Searle's NutraSweet division. He had been Robson's special assistant at the Department of Transportation. Donald Rumsfeld also hired William Greener, Jr. as chief spokesman. He was a former spokesman in the Ford White House. Now, let me break in here and make an editorial comment. George Bush is a member of Skull and Bones, as is his daddy, as was his granddaddy. Now, these insiders go to college at places like Princeton and Yale and Harvard. These are called the elite preppy schools, the Ivy League schools. These are the people who are the movers and shakers of Global 2000, the New World Order. In almost every case, and I won't say in every case, but in almost every case, these people are satanic. They practice witchcraft. It's their religion. Now, I know George Bush is a member of Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones is the chief architect of geopolitical policy in the United States. That little group of people from Yale. And very little is known about them, but what little is known about them goes back to about 1830. I think I did a report on Skull and Bones. I kind of forget now. Maybe it was one of my lectures or something. I don't know if I've aired it on the air or not without going back in the archives and checking it out. But Skull and Bones is the number one think tank in the United States. All policy is approved through Skull and Bones in this country. And then over in Great Britain, they've got an equivalent of Skull and Bones over there called the Tavistock Institute, and so on around the world. Every country in the world's got this think tank, and these think tanks are connected to the Committee of 300. And that's where you hear about, you know, operations like Bilderbergers and Trilateralists and CFR members. You know, people like Dan Rather belong to the CFR. If you're really an insider, you might belong to the CFR and the Trilateral Commission. And if you're really an insider, you might belong to the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderbergers. And if you're really an insider, you might belong to the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, and the Tavistock Institute, or Skull and Bones. Now, there are 17 men on planet Earth that control the destiny of every nation. And there are the members of the Bank of International Settlements. That's a story I'll have to bring to you one of these days called the BIS story. We could call it the BS story, but it's the Bank of International Settlements story. The reason I bring this to your attention is that Donald Rumsfeld, now, he may not be a skull and bones man, and he may not be a trilateral member, or, but he's an insider, and he's a very important fellow, very important fellow. Now, notice here that Rumsfeld said he was going to call in his markers. You know, well, certain people owe me certain things. And so what happens here is that the Searle Company hires Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld is an insider. Rumsfeld doesn't care about you or me or anybody else. Rumsfeld is an insider. He's a New World Order guy. And he cares about money and power. That's what turns him on. It's what makes him tick. If you're a truck driver, it's that lot lizard, you know, that turns you on. Well, if you're an insider, it's power and money that turns you on. Evidently, they don't have the same interests that you have. You and I have different interests. So Rumsfeld over here now says he's going to call in these markers. He's going to get aspartame approved. Why? Because it's worth a lot of money. It doesn't have anything to do with health. It doesn't have anything to do with the health, safety, and welfare of the American public. It has to do with selling a product that makes money, makes profit. Now, people are opposed to sugar because you know and I know that sugar is bad for you. And so I read you this letter last program, I think it was, on a guy who had diabetes in his family, and he said he knew sugar was bad for him, so he got onto the artificial sweeteners. Then he found out that the artificial sweeteners were worse than the sugar. So here's what you got. Sugar is good for you. Sugar in the form, natural sugar, sugar cane, honey. You cannot overdose on natural sugar. Your body runs on sugar, by the way. Sugar is an essential to your metabolism. Without sugar, you'll die. So somebody comes along and says, gosh, look at this. We can refine the sugar cane. We can refine sugar beets, and we can get sugar, which is sweeter than natural sugar. And people love the taste of sugar. And it's this artificial sugar. It's this refined sugar. It's the overdose on sugar that's causing the toxicity. So the CNH people and Spreckles and others, you know, developed a way back in the 19th century to refine sugar. Now, once regional loss tastes real good, and you put it in baked products, and you put it in goods, and it tastes good, but it gives you diabetes. It gives you other diseases as well. And so we find out that sugar in the refined form is bad for us, but of course it tastes good, and it works well in Oreo cookies. So we put it into our cookies, and we pig out, and we get poisoned, and we give ourselves diabetes and various other diseases. So, and then we get fat from the stuff in addition to that. Then one day we wake up and say, oh my God, the sugar is bad for us, so I'm going to watch my sugar. And then look at the market for artificial sweeteners. And so we're looking at a multi-billion dollar market. You know, nothing personal, boys and girls. It's just money. And so by 1980, you know, this artificial sweetener market out there is a big business. And so the people that want money and power want to get in on the artificial sweetener business. And Donald Rumsfeld said, I'm going to call in all my markers. You know, you owe me something here, so pay me. And the payment I want is you approve this aspartame. And that's what the FDA is all about. When the markers are called in, the FDA will approve arsenic for Oreo cookies if that's what the drug companies want. Now, that's just where life is. So wake up and smell the coffee. Now, Howard Roberts, acting director of the FDA's Bureau of Foods in 1978, became vice president of the National Soft Drink Association. NSDA's National Soft Drink Association members are currently marketing a huge volume of diet drinks sweetened with NutraSweet. In 1978, the Department of Psychology, Northeastern Illinois University, in their studies of aspartame found, 1, reproductive dysfunction in male and female animals, 2, endocrine dysfunction, pituitary, thyroid, ovaries, and testes, 3, increase in weight, and 4, decrease in locomotion function. I'm going to zero in on increase in weight. Why is it that you people are drinking Diet Coke? Because you're already fat, and you want to reduce. You want to restrict your calories. And what could make more sense than to drink Diet Coke? I'm on a diet. I am limiting my calories. Now, when you get to be like, oh, yeah, I'm old, fat, and bald, you know, you say, well, gosh, maybe I should watch my weight. And so what happens here is we start drinking Diet Coke. But what did Northeastern Illinois University find? Well, one of the four things they found is that the more Diet Coke you drink, the more weight you gain. So you're already fat, you're drinking Diet Coke, and you're getting fatter, and you drink more Diet Coke because you say, well, I'm on a diet. And the word diet is the key operative word. If it's got diet in it, or restricted calories, or sugar-free, that's another buzzword. We buy sugar-free because we know sugar causes weight increase. Now, what we don't know is that the aspartame, that is the diet artificial sweeteners, cause increased weight gain. So if you're eating and you're getting fatter and fatter, and you're eating calories or calorie-less foods, that is sugar-free and diet soft drinks and so on, you're actually causing your weight gain from the aspartame. That's what it does to you. It makes you fat. That's just one of the things it does to you, but that's one. All right, now 1978, also, proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the USA raises in blood Phenylalanine, let's see if I can pronounce that. P-H-E-N-Y, Pheny, L-A-L, Lal, A-N, A-N, I-N-E, see if I can pronounce that. Phenylalanine, you know, I'm getting better at it. Phenylalanine may affect fetuses of mothers who carry the PKU gene, causing them to have lower IQ and higher incidence of developmental abnormalities. All right. So ladies, you're pregnant and you're gaining weight. And so now you're drinking Diet Coke. This Diet Coke has phenylalanine, which is the primary ingredient now in aspartame. And it may affect fetuses of mothers who carry the PKU gene. Now, if you don't carry the PKU gene, you're probably all right. But if you do, it causes your babies to have lower IQs and higher incidence of developmental abnormalities. Well, that makes a lot of work and a lot of business for pediatricians, doesn't it? 1979, science. Methanol is linked to fetal alcohol syndrome and diminished intellectual capacity in newborn rats. Well, fetal alcohol syndrome is also very common among human beings. It comes from mothers who are alcoholics and they drink a lot of booze and then they have babies and then the babies are stupid. There's just no other way to describe it. We call it diminished intellectual capacity, also number known as stupid. And that's been found in newborn rats as early as 1979. Now, I don't know when we discovered that booze affects the IQ of babies called fetal alcohol syndrome. Maybe it was after 1979. I don't know when it was discovered. I haven't looked it up, haven't found out. But I know about it, and I've known about it for 20 years. Fetal alcohol syndrome. Well, methanol, wood alcohol, causes that. And 10% of aspartame is methanol. So tuck that one away in your heart. 1979, the New England Journal of Medicine elevated the blood phenylalanine levels in PKU women result in a high incidence of birth defects. So not only is your baby likely to be dumb, but he's also likely to have six toes or four toes or to have some other birth defect, of which, by the way, ladies, 5% of all births in the United States have birth defects. That's 1 in 20. Doesn't sound very good to me. And if you'll remember, in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, God said, you practice my law, and I will bless you in the city, I'll bless you in the field, I'll bless the fruit of your womb. Birth defects, boys and girls, is not a blessing. It's a curse. 1980. Well, we're getting close to D-Day now. 1980. The Public Board of Inquiry is impaneled with Peter J. Lampert, M.D., professor and chairman of the Department of Pathology at the University of California, San Diego. Vernon R. Young, Ph.D., professor of nutritional biochemistry, MIT, and chaired by Wally N-A-U-T-A, NADA, M.D., Ph.D., Institute Professor, Department of Psychology and Brain Science at MIT. Well, Dr. Daniel Azernoff, head of Searle's Research and Development Division, stated that rats eating the required amount of DKP, aspartame breakdown product, had a statistically significant number of tumors in their wombs. And the FDA is required to review substantive objections before approving product as a drug or food additive. Normally, public hearings are conducted by administrative law judges. In this case, the FDA suggested instead that the public board of inquiry be formed, made up of three scientists rather than judges. Isn't that just special? So the public board of inquiry was impaneled with Peter J. Lampert, Vernon R. Young, and Wally Nauta, N-A-U-T-A. All of these people have MDs and PhDs, and boy, they just got all of these credentials. And these three guys are going to approve aspartame. In spite of all that we've heard so far about how Searle lied about it and did bogus research, and it was phonied up, and the FDA knew that it was phony, the normal procedure, which would be to take testimony in front of an administrative law judge with public input, is shelved. Now we're going to have a special committee. Gosh, isn't that just real special? I wonder how they're going to decide on the aspartame question. Is there any doubt in your minds, boys and girls, as to how this is going to come out? Well, the board said they had to rely on the findings of the UAREP members of the 1977 task force because they were denied access to the complete task force reports by FDA officials. The board voted unanimously to recommend banning aspartame for human consumption. Ah, wait a minute. The board voted unanimously to recommend banning aspartame. So, whoever it was here at the FDA screwed up. These three guys, with all of the credentials, Vernon Young, Peter Lampert, and Wally Nauta, N-A-U-T-A, looked at the evidence from the UAREP. They came to the conclusion, because they were denied access to all of the facts, and they said, hey, wait a minute, something's rotten in Denmark. This stuff must not be fit for man or beast. And so they banned it. Dr. Nada expressed the board's concerns for the safety of aspartame because they did not investigate the validity of Searle's tests, but only their results. The board did conclude, however, that the available data on laboratory rats did not rule out the possibility of aspartame causing brain tumors, and that indeed the evidence suggested that aspartame might induce brain tumors. How do you like that? Now, here was a special board that was set up for the express purpose of approving aspartame, and that didn't work. But hey, listen, Donald Rumsfeld is not a guy to be defeated. He's calling in all of his markers. Donald Rumsfeld's running the Searle Company in 1980, and by God, we're going to get this stuff approved, period. That's the bottom line. It doesn't make any difference if Searle is a lying sack of SH. We don't care whether they have dummied up the results. We don't care what kind of phony Mickey Mouse science they used. We are going to approve this product. There's money involved. And by golly, this is your Secretary of Defense today. This guy is as crooked as a dog's hind leg. He's about as moral as Satan himself. And this is your Secretary of State. This is the guy that got aspartame approved by calling in his political markers. Now, up to 1980, everybody is opposed to this. Everybody has exposed it for just what it is. It is a pile of crap. But we're not finished with the story yet. But next time, we will. We'll start with 1980, the public board, and we'll take a look at how aspartame was finally approved in 1981 by the FDA, no less. All right, we're just about out of time, so let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here next time. Same time, same station. God willing, of course, so thanks for listening, and good night, friends.